Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Adlai Rush said, "Whenever we serve ourselves but not our customers, we will in time serve no one." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who focuses on serving his customers. Today's Playmaker has over 30 years of executive leadership experience. With us today is a CEO whose company helps small towns survive through short line railroads. This great Playmaker is Paul Triangan. Paul is CEO at TNW Corporation. Now, TNW is an industry leader in transportation logistics and short-line railroad operations located in Dallas. TNW Corporation owns and operates three short-line railroads, three logistics centers, and a multimodal transload storage facility, all in Texas. In 2017, Paul was chosen to serve as president of the Texas Short Line and Regional Railroad Association. The TSLRRA represents over 40 railroads across the state of Texas, promoting economic development, safety, and strong business partnerships. Paul also has 30 years of experience in senior executive leadership, primarily focused in the transportation and energy sectors. Well, Paul, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm familiar with the short line railroad in monopoly, but what is the short line rail industry?
It's interesting that you phrase it that way, because people who work in this industry get it in their blood, and they just can't leave it. They may go out for a little bit, but they always come back because it gets in your blood. It becomes generational, and you'll see a lot of people in this industry whose fathers, their grandfathers worked here too. And so it's a lot of fun. There's great purpose behind what we do, and you're working around great, big, huge equipment, and it's something people become very passionate about. But we're on the freight side of the business. There's also some passenger-type things out there, but we focus on freight rail services.
Is this a competitive industry? And in addition to that, do railroads own certain areas?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about the short line rail industry to begin with. Most people don't really know that we're there because we're small companies. We're all across America. In this country, there's over 600 short line railroads in existence. Most of these are privately owned. Some of them are owned by publicly traded holding companies, but they're usually standalone small businesses. It's entrepreneurship in the truest sense, because usually these were old broken down railroads that were spun off by your big railroads that were out there. They just couldn't make money on them, so they would shut them down. And entrepreneurs would come in and they'd bring them back to life. And they'd have to spend a lot of capital to rebuild the lines. And then they wouldn't have any customers on them. So they'd find ways to bring in new customers. And boy, you just had to be so creative and cost focused and good with people. It's really a great business, but when you start to look at what it takes to build one up, it's huge. And it takes perseverance and a very long-term focus in what you do.
My guess is it's not inexpensive to run a short line railroad. And they're also looking for ways to get passengers and freight. Is that correct?
Well, it's one of the more capital-intensive businesses out there. But when we look at the industry that we're in, we focus on freight. So we're not involved in the passenger side. Our country was really built with one of the greatest passenger systems there are, or was, but then it transferred after World War II to a freight industry because the interstates were built and things moved to cars. Now, we're back to looking at how we get back into the passenger side. Our businesses are on the freight side, though.
How did you get in this industry?
Well, it wasn't something that I had originally planned on. My dad was an entrepreneur. He was in the grocery business. And so I grew up in that business, and I learned every piece of it. Ever since I was in probably seventh grade, every weekend I was working at the store. He had me wrapping meat or working in the produce department. I learned the business from the ground up.
Was this a locally owned store?
It sure was. Just kind of a ma and pa store in Des Moines, Iowa. And So I learned that business from him, and after I graduated from college, that was kind of the game plan. I was going to be involved in his business. The margins are very small. And so I was there for a few years and realized that long term, it was going to be very difficult to survive. The large box stores and the concepts of Walmarts were coming in, and they sold things for cheaper than what we could buy them for. And so I decided it was time to go and do something else, and it was a bit of a hardship in our family when I did that. But it was the best thing for everybody, and he was able to retire and sell out his business, and my parents were taken care of, and I found a position with a short line railroad in marketing. And
that just happenstance that was a position open, you got hired.
Right. And so the man who was running it was actually in his 70s, and he told me, you can't market my business until you know it, and you're going to work in every department, and I'm going to teach you the business. And he did, and he was a wonderful mentor, and I took advantage of every opportunity that he gave me and was able to move through different departments in operations and then eventually became the general manager and then the vice president and then the president, and we started to grow and add pieces to the business.
In addition to being good, or you wouldn't have been promoted, did you fall in love with the business at that point?
Oh, boy, I sure did. It really does get in your blood. But I would tell you, you know, good is based on the opportunities that people gave me and the investments that they put in me. I view myself truly as the summary of the investments that other people put into me and helped me with, even at times I didn't believe in myself. I had great mentors, and I don't really believe in the concept of I'm a self-made man. There were a lot of people who made me who I am, whether it was my father or my father-in-law, who was a first-generation immigrant who came to this country and was wildly successful. And then there were mentors in my work. And then I looked to my wife, too, who was someone who has constantly encouraged me and believed in me and my dreams to help me to get to where I am. And so as I look at that, I'm also constantly feeling that I have a role here that I need to pass that on. And it's one of the biggest calls I feel I have in my position here is to develop people. That's the most important investment that I feel I can make.
I want to ask you about that in just a few moments. Let me go back to something you mentioned about the grocery store that you grew up in. Locally owned, wasn't a big box store. One of the things I'm going to ask you in a few more minutes is customer service. From the research I did about you, customer service is big at T&W Corporation. Did you learn that from your father? Because to have a small locally owned store, the focus is taking care of your customers more than anything else. Was that inbred a part of you as you were growing up?
Well, I think listening to people is important. And as you think about what your customers want, being able to listen to them is very important. They will tell you what they want. I don't know. There was something entrepreneurial about me even as a child. I was the kid that was selling stuff door to door. When I was still in high school, I got a job selling vacuum cleaners door to door. And, you know, it was something I was passionate about. And you find out what people need and what they want. And I've always believed that you build a business off of what your customers need. They'll tell you what they want. The bigger question is how do you get the people who work with you to make sure they have the same focus and serve people from that? And I look at our company today, and we really focus on how do we take care of our employees so our employees have the same focus and take care of our customers. And so we've turned things a bit upside down at our company in that we really focus on taking care of our employees first. It's a natural progression in taking care of our customers.
One of my favorite books is called The Customer Comes Second, written by an owner of a large travel agency. And he basically said that if you don't take care of your people, they could take it out on the customer. When you take care of your people, your customers, they take care of your customer, which is obviously your philosophy. And since you've brought that up a couple of times, let's talk about that. What do you do for your people? And I'm going to ask about core values in a few moments, but let's talk about the culture of how you work with them and develop your people.
Again, I believe that our employees are our most important asset. And because if our employees aren't doing their job, we will drive away our customers in no time. It takes months to find a customer. It can take seconds to lose one. And quite often you only get one shot at that when you bring them in the door. So, and I don't care what business you're in. I look at this from the standpoint of how do we develop and take care of our employees. One of the things that we do is that we share a certain percentage of our EBITDA. We just spread it across our employees as a profit sharing. When our company does well, our employees do well. When they control costs, our company does well. When they take care of our employee or of our customers, our company does well. So we don't try to hide how we're doing with them. We're very upfront about how our company's doing and the role that they play and how they can make a difference. We buy the most expensive healthcare program that was out there. I mean, we take care of our employees. I want them to be taken care of. I want them to know they're valued. And when we hire them with the thought in mind that they are not just a resource, but they're a part of the team. And so we spend a lot of time interviewing. I hope they will come here and make a career here and stay. Many companies today look at people as an expendable resource, and they bring them in and they let them go. There's no loyalty on either side. If we're going to hire someone, then we're going to invest in them to train them and develop them and keep them here. That's important.
My guess is then you have very low turnover and you have some long-term employees who have been here for a while.
That's true. But we also have a lot of young people. And the railroad industry suffers from what they call an aging workforce. And we see this in long-term industries like the utility business and things. We're not struggling with that at T&W. Many of our managers are millennials. Now, I am just so excited about having people like this come in here and drive our business and open our eyes to the things that make a difference to the next generation. I think that bringing in new people, being open to new ideas, long-term in nature is a very positive thing, and they respond to that. People want to know they're cared about.
Well, let's talk about your core values, which goes along with taking care of your people. Integrity, safety, servant leadership, and quality. How does that now tie in with your people who are the company?
I think three of those are self-explanatory. The one that people look at with our company and go, servant leadership, what does that mean and why have you chosen that? Our team, our leadership team, came up and developed these four core values. We spent weeks with every kind of words and things across boards and sheets of paper that you could believe in. They were distilled down to four things that we really believed were part of the fabric of who we were as individuals, as a company, and who we wanted to be. Because some of this is striving to achieve to be something. And this is the kind of company we want to work for. And it's the kind of company we want to grow. And so these are going to be the posts, the guidelines that decide how we do business, the kind of people we hire, and where we're going to go and what's a good fit for our company in the future. So servant leadership, I will talk about that for a minute, because a lot of people would look at that and go, well, what does that really mean? And it really means turning the pyramid of leadership and management upside down. As opposed to someone in my position feeling that everyone should be serving me and taking care of me and I should have lots of perks and all the things that go with it, servant leadership comes back to the concept of I'm here to serve my employees.
In other words, you work for your people.
Absolutely. I need to be sure they have the resources and the culture so that they can effectively serve our customers. It turns things upside down. It part of it is being willing to say, no, I'm willing to give up the privileges of being in a leadership role so that my entire team can be successful. Well, the rest of our leadership team feels the same way. And when we're working to serve our hourly employees and make sure that they have what's necessary to serve our customers, it makes a big difference. It makes a morale in the company that they understand that they're cared about. They have a voice. We're going to listen to them. We will try different things. And we don't waste money. We don't waste resources.
Let's tie that in with something, again, that I mentioned at the very beginning you brought up, too, is customer service. I read a quotation from, I believe it was the Dallas Business Journal, and that was, for the small towns that have a short line railroad, it's very much like a big city having an NFL franchise. It's a difference between surviving and not. They give smaller towns the ability to drive economic development, track and keep companies and save jobs. So in addition to your people, you're helping the communities that you serve.
Yeah, absolutely. These lines that are 15, 20 miles long that go off of a major large railroad, this is the only thing that creates economic development opportunities for the small communities we serve. Because if you do not have rail competition on the rates for trucks, then you do not have multimodal transportation, and that's very important. So short lines have a tendency to go into the communities, and they work closely with them for economic development to help bring new companies and jobs in. I would say that many of the companies that we serve along our railroads, and we have three short line railroads in the state of Texas, many of those companies would not be there without us. We provide a very high level of service, and rail industry, how rates and all the things go on, can appear very complicated to somebody who's not worked in that industry. And as a short line, we work hard to simplify that process. We're in between. We're kind of the gap stop between the big railroads and the small shippers, too, that are not aware of how this all works. And we get them plugged into the network. We get them competitive rates. And from the bigger public's perspective, you know, the short lines, there's 43 short lines in the state of Texas alone, and we handle about 387,000 carloads a year just in Texas. Think about that. That takes about 1,024,000 trucks off the road every year. When they calculate the damages that semis do to the roads, which we as taxpayers have to pick up the gap on, it's about $45 million a year in the state of Texas. And on top of that, we pay significant property and franchise taxes in the state. So we're very supportive of the state. And in the local communities, we hire people. When my companies, or I should not say that, when our companies come into a community, when T&W comes into a community, we want to be part of the very fabric of that community.
Which means you're hiring people locally.
We're hiring people locally. We're engaged in the Chamber of Commerce. We're engaged in economic development, working with the city, the mayor, and trying to just make things better. We support the baseball and softball teams. We're in the parades. We want to come and be part of the community and help it to grow and be successful. We just want to be a part of that.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, you're in Harwood, Brownwood, Dumas. Are those the communities that you're in here in Texas?
Yeah, so we have one called the Texas Northwestern, and that was our first railroad 35 years ago. And we're just north of Dumas at a place called Sunray. And we serve several large facilities up there, like a large Valero plant and a Gavilon plant. But we also serve very small shippers that just will ship a few cars. And then we have one of the largest rail car storage facilities in the United States. TXNW. We have a second railroad in Brownwood, Texas, and part of what we've tried to do there was to invest in an old Army base that is being developed for economic development with the community, and we've had very good success with that. We serve a large Vulcan rock quarry there, so it gives you kind of a feel for what that one is like. And then we have one that is down at Gonzales. We run from Gonzales to Harwood. And same kind of situation there. We serve several customers, but we also provide storage and development. We bring in the economic development of new businesses. And
it's interesting that T&W Corporation is located in Dallas, Texas.
Right.
Dallas is one of the largest metropolitan areas, if not the largest metropolitan area, that has no body of water outside the Trinity. But correct me if I'm wrong, this area, Dallas-Fort Worth, grew because of the rails. Is that correct?
I would say it's probably true. Most of the large communities that you have out there were built around the fact that the railroad originally had stops there. Same with the small communities. And the places where the railroads have gone away have dried up and died as communities as well. So that's why it's so important that we as the short line railroads in the state of Texas are engaged with our legislatures and with the State Department of Transportation, our planners, the people who understand what's happening in transportation. They need to know the importance that short line railroads bring to the small communities and to the overall infrastructure of transportation and the movement of freight products. They need to help us to be engaged and make sure that they're supporting their short line railroads, because to a lot of people, we're kind of invisible. Some people think, wow, aren't the railroads dead? Weren't they way in the past? But actually, the railroads are doing very well and thriving very well. There's been significant consolidation in the industry, and of the large railroads, all of them are very profitable, very successful. And the short line railroads, many of them, it's the same story. So it's a great industry to be.
You mentioned consolidation. Where does T&W go from here? Is it organic growth? Is it consolidation? Is it a little bit of both?
Well, we're definitely in the marketplace looking for growth opportunities, partnerships. We focus on the short line rail industry, but transportation and logistics in general are things that we're part of. We have three short lines in Texas. We have three large logistics centers. We just are opening a new transload and cross-dock facility where we're attracting people who are not on the railroad to use our services. And then we've just started with a new partnership on a railroad up in Indiana. So we continue to look for opportunities to grow. But I would say that as we grow, we're long-term in nature. And so perseverance, slow in terms of how we grow and with the right things that fit our core values, are really important. So I think we're not out there to get huge. We're just going to strategically grow and make investments that make sense.
So in other words, as you consolidate, you purchase other companies, you tend to hold them and grow them and grow in those communities. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's what we're going to do, and we're privately owned, generational in nature with the family that owns us, and it's a long-term play for sure.
Well, this has been a terrific show. Where can people find out more about T&W and more about what you do?
You can find us at tnwcorporation.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. There's the TSLRRA. .com, which is the Short Line Association website.
Of which you are now president, is that correct?
Correct, but you can learn a lot about the short lines in Texas with our website. And I think those would be the key areas to find us. But you're reading more about us in different places.
And the TNWCorporation.com is also on our website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com. Paul, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You were definitely a playmaker.
Thank you.
And it's been great having your show. Thank you for listening to it. We've had Paul Triangan, who is CEO at T&W Corporation. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlayMakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.
Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.